Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events relating to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Welcome to our show tonight. Of course, this is Polygamy, What Love Is This? And I am Doris Hansen, your host. And we want to thank you for sharing a little bit of your evening with us tonight. Before we get started on with the show, I'd like to make a final announcement about the Adams Road Band. Is going to be at the Main Street Church in Brigham City tomorrow night at 7 p.m. And the address is 48 North Main. That's in Brigham City. They're going to share their stories and some real good music. So if you are up in that area, you're certainly welcome to come. And of course, it's free of charge. And they're also going to be at the Oasis Books in Logan. That'll be next Tuesday night, September 27th at 7 p.m. And the address of Oasis Books is 25 West Center Street in Logan. And they're going to be giving away their CD at both of those venues. So we would love to have you join them at both of those places. And I have a special announcement. If anybody is watching the show tonight and you've ever wondered if you can trust the Bible, are there any errors in the Bible? Do you mistrust any part of the Bible? Well, you're invited to attend a special meeting of a seminary professor and renowned author. His name is Dr. Norman Geisler, and he is going to be there to answer all those important questions. He's going to be coming at Grace Community Church in Sandy, Utah on October 2nd. That'll be a week from Sunday, and he'll be there from 1 to 3:30 p.m. The address is 116th South, 1300 East in Sandy. That's 11600 South at 1300 East in Sandy, Utah. Dr. Geisler has offered some 70 books. He's taught theology, philosophy, and apologetics at some of the top seminaries in the United States for over 50 years. So come from 1 to 3:30 October 2nd at Grace Community Bible Church, and we're sure you'll be blessed. You know, you can't live in Utah or become familiar with the Mormon faith without recognizing that polygamy is an integral part of the early formation of Mormon doctrine. Joseph Smith introduced it into their religion, and he claimed that God demands polygamy and that no one can enter celestial glory without living plural marriage. He even went so far one time, well, several times actually, to claim that God had sent an angel with a flaming sword to him and ready to kill him on the spot if he didn't finally agree to obey the command of plural marriage. But what Joseph Smith didn't tell those people was that he had already been practicing polygamy for a very long time before he ever came up with the angel and the flaming sword nonsense. You know, polygamists claim that plural marriage is a higher law, that it's essential for salvation, and that it isn't negotiable or revocable. Well, just a few weeks ago, polygamist Warren Jeffs was convicted of sexual assault of a child, and he was sentenced to prison where he'll probably spend the remainder of his life. After Texas has successfully accomplished what other states have failed to do, a letter to the editor was published in the Salt Lake Tribune, written by a former member of the AUB, which is the All Red Polygamy Group. His letter was so powerful, as it hit upon the realities of Mormon polygamy, that we contacted the writer of that letter to invite him to be our guest on our show. And of course, he graciously accepted. So tonight, we're pleased to welcome Troy Bowles. He's a public philosopher specializing in human rights and justice. He received a BA in philosophy from the University of Utah in 2009. I would like to introduce and welcome as our guest on the show tonight, Mr. Troy Bowles.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. You know, when that letter was published in the Tribune, I received several emails, phone calls from people who read your letter, and they were so impressed with what you wrote. And of course, it just hit right on the heart of what we do, that they they encouraged me to see if I could get a hold of you somehow and invite you to come on the show, because the letter was so good. And so what I'd like you to do for our viewers, perhaps who read the letter and forgot what it said, or for those who haven't read the letter at all, if you would read that letter that you wrote to the Tribune, and it was a letter to the editor a couple of weeks ago, and we'll put it up on the screen, too, while you read it, so that our viewers can follow along with you. Would you mind doing that?
Well, certainly. Okay. The state of Texas has finally managed to convict Warren Jeffs and send him away for life. He's had this coming for a very long time, but this is hardly a time for satisfaction or gloating. It's a time to take action again. The irony that Texas had to finally put this criminal away should be a painful jab to all of us here in Utah. Activists have dedicated their lives to exposing these sex abuse problems, and we've been met with little more than reluctance, if not outright resistance, when it comes to investigating them. Some have even had their lives threatened. Attorney General Mark Shurtleff has used the extremely poor excuse that we haven't the resources to investigate these crimes. To be fair, he said he didn't intend to prosecute polygamists who aren't abusive, but we can't guarantee equality of human rights in this sort of situation. Women in polygamous societies are under duress. They aren't entirely at liberty to express themselves. They have undue responsibilities simply because of their gender, and the whole system makes them scarce. Men of all ages start pressuring young girls to marry early, and, as in the case of Warren Jeffs, the dominant males take excess to the detriment of everyone's human rights. It is a system that's stacked against the young people, regardless of their gender, but also because of their gender. There is no healthy society that can sustain polygamy. All of these groups cast off young men who are unable to marry and are faced with lifetime bachelorhood. But these young men aren't spared the commandment to become polygamous themselves. It's hardly a fair situation, and many young men lead and go on to lead broken lives. Many of them have never known any other life and end up in severe culture shock. The women who are left behind are obligated to provide themselves, including their very bodies, as the means to the man's glory in the hereafter. And the men compete amongst themselves fiercely, especially for the younger ones. Above all, this is a question of human rights. If we didn't have a human rights society, we would surely have religion, but there would be no freedom of religion. Human rights are fundamental. Religious liberties have a place as long as they don't come at the cost of anyone's individual human rights. With polygamy, it's not a simple matter to allow its practice as a private religious ritual. Polygamists who ignore that the law limits their religious liberties are inevitably asking for the right to make polygamy into a moral imperative within their closed societies. This is not a religious liberty. And forcing girls as young as 12 into consummated marriages in the name of religion is a particularly hideous offense. There is no question that polygamy must remain illegal, and there is no excuse for refusing to prosecute offenders. It's a whole system of abuse. Jeffs is not the only offender. He had thousands of people enabling him to commit his crimes. The deeds for which he was convicted took place while he was already a fugitive from the law. What we have learned about Jeffs is just the beginning. We need a cultural change of attitude. Liberal tolerance has brought us many benefits, and we have advanced greatly in our efforts to protect human rights, but slavery had to come to a reluctant end, and this religiously coerced polygamy must end too. We have to ask ourselves where we should set limits for our tolerance.
That was such a good letter, and it was published right after the sentencing and the imprisonment of Warren Jeffs, within a week or two.
That's right.
What specifically prompted you to write that letter to the editor? Was it because there's so much decriminalization conversation coming out, or was it because Texas successfully did what the other states failed to do?
I think all of it came together all at once. We started learning about the horrible abuses that were going on in Texas, hidden within the FLDS temple. And at the same time, I'd been working on this theory for years, actually, trying to come up with an answer to this problem. How do we allow people to have maximum liberties, but how do we also prevent any harms to anyone?
Mm-hmm.
It's a tightrope.
It is.
Trying to strike the right balance. And that's what I've been working on as a philosopher for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
So after we found out what had been going on in Texas with Warren Jeffs, it seemed to me that now more than ever, I needed to make a strong public statement.
Well, we certainly are giving you a platform for that here tonight, and what you have to say is very good. And I appreciate your willingness to come and having the courage to come out and speak out about it. What responses have you had to that letter? Have you had some good ones, and have you had some troubling responses?
Well, I've had a lot of supporting responses. I've had the usual objections that I see quite often, but I've had some rather strange objections too. Usually it seems like a lot of people are trying to sidetrack the debate. So I get a lot of people objecting that, well, polygamy is no different from some other religious practice. We allow this, we should allow polygamy. And this is just poor reasoning, I think.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, one person said that, well, as long as we allow religiously coerced male circumcision, then it seems like we shouldn't be preventing people from practicing polygamy in the name of religion.
Hmm.
And I caution people always to stop before they make any kind of comparison like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a good idea to compare things that just aren't even
close.
Similar.
Not even close.
Thinking of human rights and ethics, we just can't make those generalizations.
That's true, and we know that liberty, this is the land of liberty, the land of freedom. But freedom, to have true freedom, requires responsibility, responsible
Absolutely.
Actions and behavior.
Absolutely.
Just not just free for anarchy.
Oh, certainly. And the core of our public morality, I think, involves responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
It involves reciprocity between people. We work together. We're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all seeking well-being, all things considered.
Mm-hmm.
That's the business of ethics and philosophy.
And the Supreme Court, when they ruled in the 1800s against polygamy, their reasoning was, the Mormons, you do have the right to believe however you want. That's freedom of religion. But you don't have the right to behave in religion however you want.
That's absolutely correct.
And that was a good determination. Now, let's talk a little bit about you. You're from the All Red Group, the Apostolic United Brethren, and your parents joined when you were 7 years old, I believe you told me.
That's right.
Would you tell me why they joined? Did your father live polygamy, and how did your mother accept this lifestyle?
Actually, my mother started taking an interest in some of the doctrinal matters that the LDS Church had given up over the years. And in fact, the first thing that really got her thinking was the Adam-God doctrine.
Hmm.
And she concluded after some research that that was a doctrine that the LDS Church had not have gotten rid of, or
mm-hmm.
should not have gotten rid of.
Hmm.
And so she started feeling really strongly about that, and she started getting my father thinking the same thing. But initially, she was the one who started thinking that the LDS Church has not gone in the right direction, and we need to right that situation in our own lives.
So your mother was the driving force in
getting your family
to join the polygamy group. Did your father practice polygamy?
He did. They joined when I was 7 years old, as you mentioned. And a year later, he took a second wife. And by this time, we had left the Salt Lake City area. We were living in Pinesdale, Montana, which is an AUB community just south of Missoula.
So you grew up there in Pinesdale then?
For 4 years we lived in Pinesdale, and in that time he took his second wife, and our family started growing quite a bit.
How did your mother accept polygamy? Was she pretty accepting of him having other wives?
That was always the impression that I got. She always said that it was a matter of faith and sacrifice, and she always gave the impression that she was doing her very best.
So you don't know of any of the grief that might have followed in her life? She kept it pretty private?
She did, yes.
Okay. As you grew up in the group and you becoming more aware of your surroundings, did you look forward to staying or leaving in the group? And as you formed your opinion of the lifestyle, what perception did you begin to gather in your mind, your philosophical mind about it?
Well, from a very early age, I had some very deep questions in my mind. I started reading a couple of years before I went into kindergarten. And so by the time I was in kindergarten, I had just a million questions about what's going on in the world. I was fascinated with science and history. And then a few years later, my parents converted to Mormon fundamentalism. And I always knew in the back of my mind that in this society, it seems like everyone is ignorant about all of this. Things that I had been studying since I was just little about science, and the adults in my life were just didn't know anything about it. So I didn't have a whole lot of confidence in any of the adults in my life, and I felt like it was up to me to figure all of this out.
Did you go to public school when you were growing up, or did they have their own education system there?
Well, when they first converted and we moved to Pinesdale, my parents pulled us out of public school, and we started attending Pines Academy, which is run by the AUB. And I started noticing right away that it was not what I would think of as a real school. Quite a few of the teachers, it seemed, hadn't even been to high school themselves and had very poor spelling and grammar, and by this time I was very careful about such things myself. I was a champion speller when I was growing up.
So when you were growing up, you left the polygamy group mentally before you left it physically.
Yes, I had lost confidence in it, lost interest over the years, and but it wasn't until I was 17 years old that I stopped participating.
And your parents didn't mind? Did they mind when you kind of gave up on it?
It was a big disappointment to both of them. Neither of them were happy. They wanted me to stay and go into plural marriage one day myself. But all of the whole lifestyle, my teenage years, it was just, there was so much stress living that way, that and the depression was becoming overwhelming, and I got to the point where I just couldn't go on anymore, and that was it. I was finished.
So you left at 17? Did
yes.
you actually leave physically at 17?
I stopped participating, but I stayed at my parents' house, lived there for another year and a half, and then I got married when I was 20 years old.
But you married someone that wasn't connected with the
That's
polygamy
right.
group. Okay. Now, being raised in the polygamy group, and you were in that enclosed community, so to speak, in Pinesdale, and I've been up there. I've seen how they're living up there in the mountain, in a pretty area, a very
yes,
beautiful
it is.
Area. Would you be able to tell us how you saw children being raised and the adverse effects of being raised in a polygamy community like that?
Well, something that comes to mind immediately is that in that society, a lot of parents don't vaccinate their children, don't immunize their
mm-hmm,
children.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one occasion in particular that whooping cough struck the community that we were living in, and that really upset me. There was a little boy that we knew that was close to our family who almost died.
Mm-hmm.
And so that bothered me quite a bit because it seemed so unscientific to do things that way.
That's typical. You know, that same thing happened in the Kingston group. They didn't believe in immunizing. When the polio immunization came up and any of the general childhood diseases, they would not allow us to have those shots.
Exactly. And I've seen hepatitis strike communities like this, and parents won't take their children in for a gamma globulin shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It causes huge problems.
What about the other problems that will affect polygamy, children being raised in a polygamy environment, especially a closed society where they're closed off from the rest of the people, normal people, and living, I don't know if anyone's normal really, but you know, like the FLDS, they're in their own closed society, and the AUB in Rocky Ridge and in Pinesdale, they are away from the general society. Is there adverse effects that consequences from this?
Well, definitely, and a lot of it is the fear that the children grow up with, the fear of the outside world.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's big, usually.
Right.
The Principal Voices, which is a pro-polygamy group, of course, they're very, very active in trying to get polygamy acceptable in society and decriminalized, and they have posted 10 reasons why polygamy should be decriminalized. And you basically sum that up as being 10 redundant reasons for polygamy to be decriminalized. And we don't have time to go over it point by point, but would you like to sum up what they're saying in those 10 reasons and what your viewpoint of it is?
Well, they're arguing in quite a few of these points that if we decriminalize polygamy, it will open up the opportunity for law enforcement to investigate the situation. That's a familiar plea. They're asking for it to be decriminalized, and it just doesn't seem like these are good reasons. It seems like we could talk about any crime and list these reasons as well as a plea for, well, can't I be the exception?
But we
can't do that.
So are they asking for two sets of rules, a set for you and me and our community, and then a separate rule for themselves?
Well, that's the impression that I'm getting, and that seems to be where decriminalization would take us. And Owen Allred, he put this into words a few years ago before he died, and he actually said that he would prefer that polygamy remain illegal, because that would sort of keep the riffraff from getting involved in that. And
keep it exclusive,
an,
right?
An exclusive, exceptional sort of practice.
Yeah.
But in a system of human rights and justice, we just can't do that. We can't have a different set of rules for this group aside from everyone else.
Well, what they're basically asking is to decriminalize it. They don't want to take it off the books as being a crime. They just don't want any penalty attached to the crime.
Right.
Well, there's no other... Is there any other crime that we do that with?
I can't imagine. Normally, that seems like a rather outrageous plea to ask the law to just ignore what you're doing.
And they're doing that anyway. I mean, what's it?
That is effectively what is going on, no doubt about that.
And you made that point in your letter to the editor that they are ignoring the law and not prosecuting polygamists.
That's right.
And again, our platform is never to round up all the polygamists and throw them in jail. That's not our platform. We want to educate them and get them to know that this is not something they have to do to please God. Which leads me into my next question. The obvious question that comes both from a philosophical viewpoint and a spiritual viewpoint is, why would a good God require polygamy?
Oh, that's a question that would get any philosopher thinking very deeply. So I can only imagine that a God that is good would be rational and would not make irrational demands of human beings. So when we have a society that's roughly one male to one female, a 50-50 split between men and women at marrying age, it seems irrational that God would command polygamy when it's impossible for all of the men to practice it. It's
right.
Just there just aren't enough wives for the men to marry, and they quickly will run out of available.
We've witnessed that, haven't we?
Yes, we have. And so all polygamous societies cast off young men in one way or another because there just is no opportunity for them to get married and start their own lives.
And there's nothing in the polygamous command in section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants, which is Joseph Smith's polygamous revelation. There's nothing that excuses these men for not living polygamy. You
no.
either live it or be damned, and yet it's impossible for them to live it.
Exactly. And so it's a sort of contradictory existence, and I can't see how justice can ever come out of that situation. So a good God, I believe, would be a just God.
And that's true.
In order to have justice, we need to be rational. So that's how I feel about
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of, I don't know how many of the personal stories you've read, but Susan Schmidt wrote His Favorite Wife, and there are other, she specifically mentions in her book, but I've heard it from other women too, where they questioned their role as a polygamous wife, thinking that God must really love the man more than he loves the women, and they couldn't understand why God would create sons and daughters, as they call us, and like the men the most by giving them all of this stuff and the women taking it all away in the polygamous lifestyle. In other words, a man is never alone, but the woman is always alone. The man always has somebody to feed him, to give him clean clothes, to wash his feet, or do whatever he needs to do wherever he goes. The woman isn't. There's no fairness.
That's right.
And the women would complain to God, "What? Why do you love them more than you love us?" That's not a good God, is it?
I should think not. That seems like it's too much to ask of human beings.
Well, it's like you say, be rational, and that's very, in our poor opinion, that's irrational. When does the philosophy live and let live not work in a moral society?
Well, we do have to draw the line somewhere, and that's why I always say it's whenever human rights are in danger, We have to be concerned not only that everybody has maximum possible liberty, but we also, at the same time, have to make sure that everyone can expect to be free from harm.
Mm-hmm.
So that is another very important human right. So we can't ever use our liberties if it's going to come at the expense of someone else's rights. If I take a liberty that causes harm to someone else in any way, then I'm in the wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's how our laws are set up. And most of the time, they work that way. They work properly.
Now, we've seen Sister Wives, Big Love, and now the new book coming out that they're working, actually signing tonight, Love Times 3, about the Darger family, a man with three wives, coming public with their polygamy. And even in the Sister Wives reality show, I've heard them say, but we're not forcing our children into this. Their children were forced into it when they were born into it. They were forced into the polygamous lifestyle, but they say that when they grow up, they're not going to force them into living polygamy. And yet that is their doctrine. That is their faith, is what brings them into living this life. How can the children not be affected?
I don't know, because the children are, according to that belief, the children are all commanded just as much as their father to enter into this lifestyle. So it's hard for me to believe that they are allowing their children the free choice to step away from this if they wish, because they've spent their childhood teaching these children that it's the most important thing. They call it the most holy principle.
They do. Mm-hmm. They do. And the principle itself says that if you don't live this, you will be damned.
That's correct.
It says that. And if you know about this law and you don't live it, you will be damned. That's what Joseph Smith said.
And there's an unequal situation right off the bat, because this turns the women into objects to be collected, because the men all want to have at least three wives.
Mm-hmm.
So they're fighting to marry, you know, possibly anyone. They just want
their minimum wives.
That's right. And so this puts all of the women in just a completely unequal situation, where they are objects that the men are trying to collect.
Mm-hmm.
They are means by which the men will attain their glory in the hereafter.
Just a stepping stone.
Yeah,
so
they aren't ends in themselves. They are means to the
right.
ends of the men.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't allow that in a human
That's
rights
right.
society.
That's absolutely right. Okay, we are at a point where we need to break. We'll open up our telephone lines, and if you want to call in and ask our guest a question or comment about what we've talked about tonight, our phone number is 801-973-8820. That's 973-TV20. And while we're waiting for the phone calls to come in, we have our message we would like to share with you.
You are watching Polygamy, What Love Is This?, broadcasting live from Salt Lake City, Utah. This program is the broadcast outreach of a Shield and Refuge ministry. Shield and Refuge is a point of first contact for Mormon fundamentalists who question the doctrines of the religion or who are actively seeking for an opportunity to escape the polygamist lifestyle. Examining the claims of fundamentalist doctrine against the backdrop of biblical truth is central to our efforts. We invite you to contact us. Call toll-free at 877-425-9993 or email us at tv@aboutpolygamy.com. You are welcome to join us in our monthly support group, Life After Polygamy, where you can meet others like yourself who are searching for answers about polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism. We meet monthly in the Salt Lake City area. For more details about time and place, call us toll-free at 877-425-9993 or email us at tv@aboutpolygamy.com. We want you to know that we have made available to you some outstanding resources free of charge. You will find them at our website, www.whatloveisthis.tv. There you will find the DVD, Lifting the Veil of Polygamy, which documents the real-life stories told firsthand of those who were lifted out of the culture of polygamy through the power and love of Jesus Christ. Also, free of charge to you is the booklet, Is Polygamy Biblical? It explores plural marriage in the context of God's Word and answers questions like, did God ever command polygamy? Is it part of God's plan? While you are at our website, make sure to take advantage of the archived episodes of this program, which can stream on demand directly to your computer. There are more than 100 shows to choose from. And if someone you know is unable to view this program via live broadcast, recommend that they visit this same website every Thursday at 8 p.m. Mountain Time to watch this show through live streaming video. Simply follow the links to the live streaming video page. If you are watching live tonight, we invite you to call us as we open our phone lines. The number is 801-973-TV20. That's 801-973-8820. Now, back to Polygamy, What Love Is This? With our host, Doris Hansen.
We're back, we're back with our guest, Troy Bowles. He is a philosopher, and he's using his talents in determining and bringing to the public eye the philosophy of the human rights and abuses that are inherent in a polygamous society. And we've had some interesting conversations so far. I would like to mention right now that he will be with us again next month. He's on October 20th, and we are going to do a book review. We're going to discuss that new book that we just mentioned already, Love Times 3, which is a book that has just recently been released this past week about a polygamous family here in Salt Lake City, a man with three wives, which I believe that was what the big show Big Love was based on, was this family, if I understand
that's
correctly.
That's what I'm told, yeah.
And so we will read that book, and he'll be back next month, and we'll do a book review on the story that they've written in that book. So we have a call. We have Janelle calling from Payson. Line one. Hello, Janelle.
Hi, Doris.
Oh, hi.
How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing really good.
What's your question? Do you have a question for our guest?
I do. My in-laws are polygamists. Me and my husband are not. And so I have been around the polygamy situation out in Rocky Ridge. And my question is, do you believe that the women are brainwashed like we've heard over the news, or do you think it's just more of them being scared, like, in the situation to leave? Because I believe a lot of them do know that it's wrong, but I just don't know if it's more brainwashed or scared.
Well, the way I describe it is that women are under duress in polygamous societies because they have a special obligation to provide themselves as the means by which the men will attain their glory in the hereafter, their exaltation. So they have a special obligation there. And since they're under this implicit pressure all of the time, they can't always be honest without coming under harsh criticism in their peer groups. It's hard to be sure if they're really consenting adults. So that's a big question that I've got. A lot of people say, they're consenting adults, it shouldn't be a problem, but no, because they're in this special situation and they're under duress, I'm not sure if we can say that they're giving proper consent. But I hesitate to say that they're brainwashed. That's a very strong term.
Right. I agree. That's why I was kind of wondering, because I know they've used that word a lot when the Warren Jeff case broke out, that the women out there
having been born and raised in a polygamy group and having and being a female myself, I would say that we can use the word brainwashed in many of the situations. I know I was. And when you're conditioned from the cradle to believe something, and you know, anytime anyone can say, "Thus saith the Lord," and then they've got your eternity in the words that they say to you, they can brainwash you very easily. And part of that, I would say it to the brainwash, is fear. They instill that fear in you that if you don't do this, God's going to get you. You know, you're going to go to hell for eternity and there's no way out. No, it's the unforgivable sin. So I would say there are some women probably who aren't brainwashed. There's some who are. They're more susceptible to it. I know one girl that I helped out, she said, I asked her if she knew when she went into polygamy if it was illegal, and she said no. That's just what they did, and so that's what she did when she married her polygamist husband. She didn't know till later that it was illegal.
Well, and that's a big problem, because if we're a human rights society, then if we raise our children and don't teach them that they have human rights, that is itself a disservice to them. We can't protect their human rights if they don't even know that they have them.
That's so true. And you know, in polygamy groups, and we've talked about this already tonight, the groups themselves want these rights. They want the right to have their human rights, their rights of their rights to religion, to practice everything, have that. But they're not willing to give the members of their groups the rights that they have coming in this country as well. They demand them themselves, but they're not willing to give them.
Exactly. Another serious problem is that when you grow up in a society like this, they withhold information. And this was a big problem for me, because as I was growing up, I was just clamoring for any information I could get. So,
but they do. They withhold.
They withhold information.
And you can't make a. How can you make a decision like a woman getting married without the proper information?
Oh, I just don't think that anybody can make a decision like that if they don't even understand what human rights are, the concept that they have human rights, civil rights, any of that.
And how would a woman who is being maybe coerced or forced into, pressured into marrying into a polygamous situation, how would that woman go about discovering whether or not God really wants her to live polygamy? They just take it from their parents. You've got to do this. And so they do it because their parents say so. How would she go about even discovering if that is God's will?
Well, questioning that is highly discouraged.
It is. It's almost forbidden.
Right. And when in these societies, there's almost an implicit rule at all times to give the impression that you're happy with this. Don't let anybody see that you might be disappointed, because that's seen of a lack of faith.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And like I said, my in-laws are from polygamy. They got out, I don't know how many years ago, but quite a few years ago, about 10, I would say, but are still up there. And when they decided to leave, everybody had turned against them. It was very, quite an unworthy thing. They, and right now are forcing them out because they are not living their religion.
And that's what the groups do. That's absolutely what they do. Well, thank you, Janelle, for your call. We appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
Good night.
Bye.
Okay, line three, we have Linda calling in Hurricane. Hello, Linda.
Yes. Hi, Doris.
Hi, you're on there.
Hi. Yes, I was outraged today when I saw the family, the Dargers, on Channel 2 News. And the way they were presented, like another choice in a normal family. And I just felt like it's becoming so accepted that people just are flaunting that they're breaking the law. What can citizens do when our own attorney general and officials refuse to even prosecute these people like they did back in the 40s and 50s? and as they did in Texas, and that was a big fiasco. But what could citizens do? There seems to be no law that would even prosecute them. So they, you know, where I live, they're just walking down the street, going shopping, you know, 10 mm-hmm. grocery carts and all the wives trailing behind. And now they're right on TV like they're some kind of celebrity.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And having their book signing. I thought it was disgusting. They're criminals.
What do you have to say about that?
Well, something that happens again and again in society that I've been seeing is that people, they have a tendency to lump things together. They will say, well, polygamy is an alternative lifestyle, and we're tolerant of alternative lifestyles. So, and since it's an alternative lifestyle, just like other things that we may tolerate, then we should tolerate polygamy too. But that's a big mistake, because polygamy just isn't like anything else. So each situation has to be handled on its own. Laws made specifically. We can't just lump all different things that we object to under the heading of alternative lifestyles and then say that we've got to be tolerant of all of these.
Especially
there are some we can't.
In the middle of all of this, Warren Jeffs and the bad press that polygamy has had, and we're still getting the good press about it. What do we do?
Well, we can't tolerate the sort of abuses that Jeffs has been perpetrating.
Yeah, but it's going on in every group. Jeffs just got caught.
That's right. That's true. Very true. A lot of the other groups are sort of vying for the reputation of being the good guys. Good guys.
We wear the white hats. Huh?
But they all have very troubling histories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why their societies are so closed and private, is because they don't want these things to come out. And again, that's where the fear and all of that. Linda, I think that probably the best thing that any of us could do, and we do get this call from time to time, is let your elected officials know. Get petitions going. The only way anything happens in this country is if grassroots citizens do something. And that's the only way I know of to do anything about it.
All right. Thank you very much.
And thanks for calling. Okay, we have a couple of lines, well, at least one line open right now, so you can call in 801-973-TV20, 8820. Troy, what is the real polygamy? Is it sister wives? Is it big loves? Or is it Warren Jeffs or Daniel Kingston? What is the real polygamy?
Well, whenever it ends up on TV, it gets a bit romanticized. Those TV accounts are very unrealistic. Now, not all polygamy is just like Warren Jeffs.
That's true.
The Kingston group has a different way of doing things themselves. In fact, right now they're sort of operating under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
Warren Jeffs has been getting all this bad attention, but what's going on in the Kingston group? We already know that, Paul Kingston has maybe some 350 children himself, and they are intermarried.
They do believe in incest. They've been marrying and intermarrying now for two or three generations.
And this is causing a lot of genetic problems.
Uh-huh.
So we have these problems all over in various groups, and right now, Warren Jeffs is getting all the attention, but he's not the only one.
He's not the only one. So the real polygamy is not sister wives, and it's not big love. You had mentioned that whenever you're in a group society, that the groups themselves do not stand, just being in a group, you don't have rights because they don't stand for human rights. being a member in a group doesn't allow human rights because it's their philosophy that they put onto the members. Would you explain that a little more deeply?
Well, human rights are strictly an individual affair. Human beings as individuals have rights. Groups of human beings do not have rights in that sense. A group of people can have rights maybe under a contractual arrangement, but when we talk about human rights, that's strictly an individual affair. A group cannot put an individual's rights at risk simply because the group outvotes or sort of tries to outweigh that person's individual rights. It doesn't work that way with human rights. That is where we don't give at all.
So when you get a polygamy group going that is set itself away from, that has set itself away from normal society, like for instance Rocky Ridge or Pinesdale, the leadership or the philosophy of that group will bring every one of the members under their philosophy rather than their own individual basic human rights. Is that what
that's yours? Right. And that's why I say that when Mormon fundamentalists ask for polygamy to be permitted, well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. What they're asking for is, as a group, to turn this into a divine mandate mm-hmm. for everyone. And mm-hmm. this is asking too much of individual human rights.
So it's a divine mandate for those in the group, but it's not a divine mandate for the rest of society.
Well, they would say that it's a divine mandate for the rest of society, but they would probably also say that only a certain elect few are expected to do it.
So there isn't any. Okay, we've got Melanie Price calling on line one, or Melanie from Price. Hello, Melanie.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air. What's your question?
Hi, Doris. I am calling. I have lived in Price now for about 5 years, and it's my family was born and raised here, my grandpa. There's a little town up above here headed towards Huntington called Hiawatha. And just within the last 10 years or so, the polygamists have moved in and bought that town. You can no longer, they've got it blocked off with gates and whatnot, and you can no longer even drive through the old historic town of Hiawatha. My question is I was wondering how they can buy a town like that and block it off where my grandpa's worked in the coal mines there. In fact, the polygamists there in Hiawatha are running a coal mine also. They are operating a coal mine, and they do have to hire outsiders for that, but there's no way for us to get into town and see or drive down the streets, see the old historic buildings or anything because they own the town now.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Can you answer my questions as to how we could get into that town?
No. I would say if they've got it gated, you probably shouldn't try. that's generally the way
okay.
it works. But again, if they can buy the town and they have legal rights to it, then they have the right to do what they've done. That's what they've done in the FLDS. They've gated it up down there in El Dorado. And I've seen the gates. In fact, I was stopped at the gates myself when we were down there. And you just can't get in.
Uh-huh, same scenario here. And so there's just the only history we'll have of Hiawatha is in the books and the pictures.
Yeah.
Correct? Is that?
Yeah.
There's nothing we can do legally.
No, not unless you want to contact your city fathers and see what they have to say.
Okay, well, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, very quickly, we need to wind down about right now. It says, we have an off-the-air question. If polygamists have Jesus in their name, how can they call themselves Christians when they don't follow his teachings? That is a very good question. I think that everybody who wants to be called a Christian should ask that, because Jesus specifically said that there is no marriage in heaven, and they don't believe him. So I don't know how they can be called Christian if they don't believe the Christ in Christianity. We do appreciate you watching our show tonight and spending some time with us, allowing us into your home. And Troy, thanks for coming. Thanks for sharing your philosophy with us. We've got several months ahead of us. Troy's agreed to be on our show up through December, maybe even further than that, as we discuss the different philosophy of polygamy, human rights, and what it does to our society and what it doesn't do when it pretends to be doing something. So he'll be back again in October on the 20th, okay? And my closing comments is going to be about polygamy. Surprise. God has informed us that he doesn't show favoritism, and neither should we. But polygamy is all about favoritism. Polygamy is about inequality and violation of basic human rights, and someone always loses in the polygamy life. The Bible says in 1 Corinthians 7:2 that every man should have his own wife and every woman should have her own husband. Monogamy, not polygamy, was God's original design. And you can argue all you want for Joseph Smith and his threat of damnation to all who don't live polygamy, but God said, don't do it. Now, those who use Sarah and Hagar and Abraham as valid biblical examples for polygamy are stupid. You'll never find where God commanded, and Sarah even admitted that it was her bad idea, and later God told Abraham to send Hagar away. Polygamy doesn't make you right with God. Polygamy doesn't pay for your sins. You'll never find celestial marriage in the Bible. It's a myth. Celestial marriage takes you away from God's truths and focuses on what you do in the flesh instead. And John 6:63 says, the Spirit gives life and the flesh counts for nothing. The genuine, new, and everlasting covenant is exclusively Jesus Christ and Him crucified. It is He who bought you with His blood, and that is all that counts. To believe that polygamy is the new and everlasting covenant completely voids what Jesus did for you on the cross and will make His grace and forgiveness unavailable to those who depend upon celestial marriage. Polygamy or celestial marriage is a diabolical substitute for the beauty of the true saving gospel of Jesus Christ. You would do well to check these things out because eternity lasts a very long time.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email@whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.